the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Culture Hall of Fame.
Brought to you by Now TV. Watch whatever you're in the mood for.
Right, it's time for this week's OTB Culture Hall of Fame in association with Now TV, where you can stream award-winning dramas such as Game of Thrones and Parks and Recreation, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and now, of course, Gangs of London, which is a show that I've been raving about for a bunch of weeks here, Owen, and I have a feeling we might end up doing player ratings on Gangs of London as well, because it is that good. A lot of people have been wondering, is it as good as I've been making it? I would say yes.
You have been making a lot of Gangs of London. For sure. You've definitely been the biggest hype man for Gangs of London, to the point where I actually started it. I was a sheep in all of this. I haven't regretted it, that's for sure. It's the least boring show you're ever likely to watch. I'll put it that way. People will have divisive opinions on violence, and I'm okay with that. But if you're a fan of violence and see it as an art form, which I certainly do when it comes to a lot of filmmaking, then you'll enjoy Gangs of London.
It's elevated to a higher art form in this. Like, it is super violent. And so certainly the first couple of episodes, my wife was like, there's a lot of violence in this. Is it going to ease off at any point? But we stuck with it, and I'm really glad we did, because there were definitely like scenes that were like, wow. Have you got to the... I don't want to spoil anything. Have there been eyeballs yet?
No. Well, thanks for that spoiler. I now know what part of the body is no longer sacred in Gangs of London. You almost have to rack your brain for all the different things that happened. But no, I would have remembered that. I'm only six episodes in.
I know, you probably have seen it then. I might have, it was early on. Anyway, this will be a piece with no spoilers. We're absolutely delighted and thrilled to have Joe Cole, who is the star of the show. He plays Sean Wallace, who's the central figure in Gangs of London. He is the son of Colm Meaney in it, and without giving too much away, we're going to play you this trailer. On the far side of that, we're going to talk with Sean Wallace, aka Joe Cole, is the actor who plays Sean Wallace. So we'll let the trailer do the rest of the talking. No spoilers.
We're born into a certain world. It's chosen for us. Some might think it's brutal.
No! No! No, please! Please don't kill me!
I say it's glorious.
Someone chose to kill Finn Wallace. Today we mourn the loss of a great man. But tomorrow it will be business as usual.
No.
Everything stops. Until I find out who killed him.
Right, welcome to this week's edition of the OTB Culture Hall of Fame, sponsored by Now TV, where you can stream award-winning dramas like Game of Thrones and Parks and Recreation, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and now, of course, Gangs of London. And I'm delighted to say we've got Joe Cole with us, who is, of course, starring as Sean Wallace in Gangs of London. Joe, how the hell are you getting on?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm trying to keep busy, trying to keep some semblance of routine. But no, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Well, I'm good, but I can imagine this is like a very weird situation for you to be in right now, because you know normally you would be doing interviews in a posh suite in a nice hotel in London somewhere, talking about this brand new series and getting out and doing all the publicity. Mm-hmm. And instead, you're stuck at home. On the other side of it, everybody else is stuck at home, and this is a good opportunity for a new TV show to be coming out that has captured everybody's attention. So. It's not ideal, but at the same time, there's a captive audience there.
Yeah. It's, in some ways, it is very good timing for us, because I guess there's so many people at home watching television, obviously, because of the lockdown. It's just crazy. So yeah, hopefully we'll get a few more viewers.
What is it like doing publicity around something when you actually can't get out and tell everybody how great it is?
You know, you see the reaction online, you know, you see some of the interviews and some of the social media reactions. So you get a sense of what people like and what people don't like. And, it's all right, man. I'm all right with it. You know, it's I don't have to sort of traipse around London going to, loads of loads of different places. I can just do it all from my bedroom. So it's okay, man. I'm all right with it.
I think it's been said about the Michael Jordan documentary recently, Joe, that it's been gauged on two different fronts, not just the viewing figures, but also how many days is it trending for on Twitter. And as a social media success, it's been unbelievable. I presume people involved with Gangs of London think about it in the very same way. Are people talking about it on social media is just as important as how many eyeballs do we have on the TV show?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we don't have the kind of water cooler office chats and you know, that people have very little interaction with one another at the moment. And obviously it's all done through computers. So it is just a different way of kind of getting the message spread. Because I think Gangs of London is very much a show that, is something that that is a word of mouth kind of thing. And it's much the same as Peaky was. Peaky was pure word of mouth. They didn't really have any press on it. And obviously with Gangs, we're not really able to do any advertisement. You know, I think they wanted to do big sort of advertisements across the London Underground and buses and stuff all over the country, and they can't do any of that. So it's purely word of mouth and purely social media, really.
It seems to be going quite well. Are you nervous about this stuff when it comes out, or your work is already done, so you can't influence it too much from this point forward? Have you kind of learned to disassociate your feelings of success or failure with how well it's perceived, or as an actor and an artist, you kind of have to be aware of what people are actually saying about the work that you've produced?
A bit of both. I don't get offended, and I don't get too attached to it. I actually remember hearing this thing that Tom Cruise said, you know, I don't subscribe to everything he kind of shouts, but this I really listen to, and he sort of said, if he gets a positive review, or a negative review, it doesn't sway him either way. A positive view doesn't give him particularly much joy. A negative view doesn't give him much pain, because he watches his own performance. He has his own analysis of the film. He has his own sort of interpretation of it, and that's that. And I guess for me, I'm the same. You know, I watch something, I have my own things I like about it. I'm extremely critical and analytical as well. But also, you know, you generally, you pick up some stuff. You're never going to please everyone. You know, it's a very divisive show and quite a divisive performance, if I'm honest. And that was what the guys at Sky and what Gareth Evans wanted. So you're never going to please anyone. But you do listen, and you kind of... But also, I just critique my own performance, and I have to watch my own stuff so that I can learn and improve and do different things the next time, you know.
How much of that self-analysis do you do on something like this? So we had Louise Harland on last week, who's in Derry Girls, and she was saying that she was in a movie with Woody Harrelson, and she looks back on it now and like internally cringes a little bit because of all the things that she's learned and how much better she feels she is now. I'm sure the rest of us wouldn't notice any of the difference. But from your own perspective, how much video analysis do you do? Are you like a Premier League footballer or a rugby player looking back and going, why did I do that? I should have done this.
I am actually. I think for me, I don't really understand actors who don't watch themselves. I could only watch it once or twice. But sort of like the first time to get through it, the second time to actually maybe enjoy it a bit more. But you learn a lot, and then you also kind of got to just forget about it really, and actually I subscribe to the belief that if it's 80-20, you know, if I'm 80% happy, then I'll take the 20 that, you know, I'll let that go.
Especially I'd imagine when you look at something like Gangs of London, where there is just such a body of analysis for you to get stuck into. It's not like you're flitting around the edges here. You are very much the main character. If you want to be self-critical, you've got a lot of opportunities of scenes to work with here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny because it's like people immediately see a gang show and they want, a Tony Soprano or a Tommy Shelby, right? And this character's not that. And you know, and on the page, he's not that, and he learns, and he kind of learns and grows as the show goes on. But he's cut from a very different cloth, and essentially, Sean. What I found most interesting about Sean is he's a fish out of water in all walks of life. You know, he's probably too emotional and too messed up to be the, at least in the early stages, be this completely ruthless, cutthroat individual. I mean, he does do some very shocking things, but he's also quite emotional with it. You know, he's been sent to the kind of most expensive private school in the country. So he was a fish out of water there because he's from this very troubled gangster family. And for me, he's just, he doesn't fit into any kind of category. And I almost feel kind of sorry for him because he's essentially a bit of a loser in some ways. And that's what I kind of found kind of interesting, particularly in the episode 4 flashback with Colm Meaney. You get a sort of a sense of this guy's trying to live up to his dad and he's trying to be this person, but he's been sent to this very expensive school and he's just trying to prove himself and he doesn't really know what to do. And he's kind of, his building blocks, which is his kind of childhood, is non-existent and it's crumbling away. And I think only by the end of this season, there's a kind of an enlightenment to Sean and a kind of comfortability that he starts to get and a kind of, you know, almost a Buddhist kind of feeling where he actually sort of grows into himself. So it almost takes a whole season to do that. So yeah.
How do you inhabit that character when you read this for the first time? Like, how do you get into that sense of what the relationship is like with Colm Meaney? How do you become him without also losing yourself and having that ability to kind of see the fact that he's growing and has this growth to happen?
I mean, you react from the other performances. You kind of listen and the way Colm plays it, you react to it. But also, it's just in the script, isn't it? It's kind of like the way it's written. You know, in those flashback scenes, for example, is Sean is just awkward and he's just trying to fit in and he can't really.
There's also the challenge here, which kind of looms overhead for Sean throughout the entire season, is that he's a grieving son as much as anything else. He's not only somebody looking to take over an empire, there is also the very real aspect of grief in his life from an unexpected death of a character he so wanted to please and to impress throughout his entire life. And I guess that has to be factored in when you look at the transformation of Sean throughout the 9 episodes.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot going on. He's incredibly emotional, incredibly volatile, doesn't trust anybody, doesn't like any of them. And when we meet him, his dad's literally been killed sort of, you know, 2 or 3 days previous. So, and it's his first time with him seeing all these people that he despises. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And then as the show goes on, that he uncovers a lot about his family and his father and his history that makes him question things even further and almost spins his view. So it's quite interesting, you know. But initially, yeah, it's just this pure kind of guttural grief of losing his dad.
Was there a model? Is there like the father-son relationship or even that kind of who those characters are? Did you model those on anybody in particular?
Well, I said in one interview, Barry and Eddie Hearn, you know, Eddie Hearn, the boxing promoter, sort of gained traction and went off the rails. But, you know, I guess in some ways, you know, I did a lot of research on gangsters and gangster families, and essentially all these people who grow up to be kind of career criminals have a masculine sort of figure in their life who is their main role model, whether it be their dad, their stepdads, an uncle, a friend of the family. They have a very clear role model who is a masculine alpha male with, you know, nice watches and nice cars and cash in the back pocket. Yeah, I liken it to them in a weird way, just because, you know, I suppose Eddie Hearn had to prove himself. His dad achieved kind of so much in the world of sports promotion, and then his son came into the fray and had to do things on his own terms and on his own merit, and sort of that to me was just kind of funny and kind of interesting, you know. Like at the beginning when Eddie Hearn started out, no one liked him or trusted him. No one thought much of him. And I think there's a running joke now that people sort of make a joke that they don't like him, when actually I think probably a lot of people do, because he's done a lot of boxing. But I just found that kind of cool, kind of fun.
Yeah, is he on record yet as going, hang on a second, what? Or is he like, yeah, exactly, that's exactly who I am?
I don't think so. He'd probably have something to say about that, I'm sure.
I think it'd be the biggest compliment in the world for Eddie Hearn that Sean Finn models him on him.
Yeah, we'll see about that one.
Come here, while you bring up boxing, right, can I talk to you a bit about A Prayer Before Dawn? Because the fight scenes in A Prayer Before Dawn, I don't know if people will be familiar with this, but it's set in a Thai prison where you're playing an English prisoner who is trying to fight for his life. By all accounts, the fight scenes were pretty severe and quite intense for you. There was no stunt double, there was no body double. This was you actually sparring and fighting against real people. So are you into fighting? Were you into boxing anyway? Was that a kind of natural thing for you to get into, or is that where your kind of love of the sport comes from?
I've done a little bit of boxing, not much. And then now I do a lot more kind of box, you know, box or Thai box, you know, once or twice a week. And I love it. I guess I gained a lot of the sort of, passion for it from out there, from training every single day in Thailand and in Atlanta before that, and kind of running, you know, like, I didn't used to run much. I used to just lift weights and stuff like that, and do judo. And then I started running in Thailand for this thing, and I kind of really got into that. And I started getting back into it since we've been in quarantine, because obviously you can't do any gym work. So, but yeah, for me, boxing probably came from Thailand. You know, it's Thai boxing out there is such a big part of their way of life.
So you're literally filming in a Thai jail, and there are former inmates who are coming to fight you. And, you know, I mean, even outside of their role in the movie, you're the Westerner who's the actor, who's the big shot, who's here, and they're allowed to hit you. I suspect they were taking advantage of the opportunity at the time.
Yeah, there were a few moments. I was going to these kind of spit and sawdust camps with my trainer. We were just hitting up all these kind of really raggo camps in Bangkok, and yes, a few times, like, they would see this white guy from the UK the director came in, had a camera and stuff, and I think they'd want to try it on with me. So the sparring used to get a bit hairy, because obviously we'd do, like, I don't know, we'd do stuff like, you know, body sparring and things like that, and grappling, and it used to get a bit hairy, man. But I kind of enjoyed that. And when we were doing the film, we were sparring, and then there's some small bits of choreography in there. And I remember fighting the Southeast Asian. There's a guy who'd been in the prison in which we filmed. He'd been there for 7 years. The prison closed down, the oldest prison in Thailand. We repopulated with all the officers and loads of ex-cons from around Thailand and career criminals and people who've been inside for years and years and years. And they actually got a lot of the officers who just moved to the brand new prison down the road to come back and film in that prison, which was great. So that guy knew one of the officers, and they're like having a laugh and stuff. And he'd been there 7 years. He showed me the bed in which he slept. And I remember sparring with him. The reason I could spar with him was because he was a lower weight category, and I was sort of trained how to kind of keep away from him and keep him at arm's length, and, you know, AJ the guy. And then he got up in my guard and sent me to space, and, you know, the camera's rolling, and I grab him, and you sort of, in Thai boxing you can clinch people, and it's, you know, it's different to boxing, you can actually grab hold of people. So I'm grabbing hold of him, camera's rolling. We used to do long takes, and I'm kind of half there, half not, and then eventually I come back to and I push him away, and we carry on the sparring, and then we do the choreography at the end, where I sort of batter him. And, you know, and it was kind of moments like that, which I think, you know, as weird as they were and as difficult as they were, I guess it was it kind of made it more authentic in some ways.
And also make you feel alive, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point of doing anything, is to feel alive when you're doing this. It's like, where am I? I'm in Thailand against some guy who was in this prison for 7 years and I'm fighting him and there's a camera over there. That's like a, I mean,
I've taken a few knocks, but that was definitely like, I think the hardest knock I've ever taken, for sure. And, you know, I think it's important to have that when you're doing a boxing film, right?
Yeah, totally. And just in terms of career as well, like you can play different roles, but I think for moments that you can look back on and go, well, that was me doing something that people didn't expect me to do, that I didn't expect myself to be able to do. And then I came out the other side of it and it was like, this is really good stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, it was a great experience and a great opportunity. And Jean-Stéphane Van Zaver, the filmmaker, is just, he's just wonderful. And I'm so grateful, because I wanted to do a film like that, you know. Like I looked up to Tom Hardy and Bronson and Fassbender in Hunger and those kind of films. And they're true stories. They're very physical performances, obviously very different, you know. And I was like, you know, I need to do a film like that. If I really want to kind of put myself in a slightly different bracket, I need to go and do a film that's a true story that puts my body on the line and puts my, you know, puts me on the line physically and emotionally and is completely immersive. And then I was lucky enough to do it with Prayer. And I feel very grateful, because those films are so hard to get made and less so they're going to get made now. Like, even especially with what's going on, like with COVID, you know, those films are just going to disappear, and it's going to be mainly television, I think, and the spandex superhero stuff.
Yeah, for the next while anyway. There's yeah. Always a reaction. This is the OTB Culture Hall of Fame, sponsored by Now TV, and we ask people to nominate something, that a piece of work that they love, that if it's on TV you're not flicking past. What's yours?
Well, I've got to say my favorite film is probably City of God, which I watched when I was you know, in my mid-teens at my mate's house. I used to go to my mate's house to watch all the 18s when I was like, I guess like 13, 14, 15. I wasn't allowed to watch them at home. So I used to go there and watch Godfather and Goodfellas and Jackie Brown and the Tarantinos and watch City of God there. And it just stuck with me. And it kind of, just as a complete kind of epic story that spans years and follows these characters through different periods of their life and different decades was I just thought was incredible. You know, it's set in the favelas in Brazil, and it's just wild, man. Wild true story.
It's got the most amazing soundtrack as well. When we send reporters to Brazil for the World Cup and for the Olympics, every time they were on, we would introduce them with the No Camino do Bem, just the bass line from that. And everybody is immediately happy and going, right, this is going to be a really interesting piece of radio that we're about to create because of the soundtrack. And obviously actually, you ripped it off completely.
I actually think it's a great kind of lockdown film, because it's quite escapist. Obviously, it's not the cheeriest of films, but it's great escapism. You know, a hot, sort of beautiful country, very, very far from here and very, very far from our lives.
That's such a good point, actually. I think the last thing anybody wants to click on right now is anything to do with a pandemic or anything too close to home a little bit. Like, it's interesting that you mentioned going over to your friend's house watching Tarantino films as a kid, because I wanted to just get your brief take on the depiction of violence and how well it is being done at the moment in Gangs of London, because it is spectacular. The fight scenes, I'm 6 episodes in, so I think basically the first 4 episodes all end with just unbelievable cinematic violent experiences. I just love to get your take on that and how that's transferred from you as a kid watching Tarantino to now being part of this extravaganza of violence.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's usually those kind of stunts, especially in television, are a secondary thing, and you know, they'll get someone in to sort of hoover them up, and you know, no discredit to anyone, but it's not usually the main focus. And then in this, it was put a lot further to the forefront. Jude Poyer, the stunt coordinator, was working with you know, Gareth and Corin and Xavier and doing these incredible set pieces. And it's this infusion of Eastern cinema, you know, this sort of East Asian kind of cinema with the kind of Hollywood sheen set on the sort of gritty streets of London. And it's interesting because it's like some people, it's difficult for them to get it, and I, you know, it's quite almost cartoonish and heightened and very well choreographed and over the top, but it's a different style of filmmaking. It's a different style of cinema coming into our UK TV shows. So it's just something new for people and different. And I thought it was a breath of fresh air.
It's adrenalizing, right? Like you're watching those fight scenes going, ooh, ah, ooh. And there's very few TV shows that actually are able to do that anymore.
Yeah, and what I actually found was I just was so shocked and kind of impressed with some of them that I would just sort of burst out laughing or burst out just sort of like screeching, like, what the hell, you know, because I couldn't believe it. And they're the reactions you want because it's entertainment at the end of the day. And I certainly got that from a few of the scenes. I'm like, are you, you know, it's like when you think it's all said and done, Gareth Evans drops a whole load more craziness in, or Corin Hardy. And yeah, for me, I just found it quite entertaining.
Can I ask if there's going to be a season two? Like, I deliberately do not Google anything to do with a television show that I'm currently watching because you will get spoilers. And I'm sure there is an answer to this already online.
Mm. I mean, I think, you know, if the people want it, then they'll do it. I think there's a whole new other world that could be explored. Kind of deeper and a wider net. You know, it's called Gangs of London, but London is one of the most multicultural cities in the world, and there's a whole load more cities and a whole load more countries and a whole load more levels that could be explored. So yeah, I mean, it, depending on how it goes down, I think there could well be they could well do something. We'll see.
I've got to ask you about the Irish aspect of this whole thing. So Colm Meaney is kind of an Irish national father figure because of the films that he made in the 90s, in particular, The Snapper. And obviously he's your dad in this. The Irish dads have a particular kind of standing in Ireland and Irish society. Were you aware of any of that? Did you tap into any of that at all? Or was that all kind of unnecessary?
Oh no, of course, man. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of Colm's, and he came on to the project a little bit after I'd signed on, and I know they were trying to find that role, and obviously it's a very difficult role to cast because he's in flashbacks mainly, really. But you need somebody with real presence, real screen presence, and somebody who evokes that exact feeling that you just described. And that's so hard to do. I mean, I can only think of, you know, one on one hand, you know, people who could do that really, you know, or if that. And I think getting him was a real coup because Finn Wallace's shadow is cast across the whole show, and Colm can come in and do one, two scenes, and you immediately know who this guy is, know how serious a gangster he is, and how serious a player he is. And he just does it in a couple of scenes, and then the rest is through flashbacks. So yeah, it was great to have him on board and great to work with him.
And were the gangsters were the Wallaces always Irish, or if for example they had cast a Scottish actor in that role, would he have done an Irish accent and been Irish, or was the intention it became Irish when it became Colm Meaney?
I think the whole idea was that it was Irish. Yeah. Don't mess with the Irish.
Turns out they have an army ready to go whenever they need one.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you've got the money that the Wallaces do.
And disbelief there, Sam.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, we've really enjoyed talking to you about it. It is a massive smash hit success. You know, people are definitely talking about it. Do you feel that at the moment? Can you feel that bubbling up?
Not really, because I'm just sitting in my house. But you know, I'm sure when I get out on the streets, I'll get a bit more of a feel for it.
And you must have felt that with Peaky, right? When you kind of see that, as you said, it was word of mouth and it was a slow burn, but then it explodes and it goes global. Like, this is, you know, really is going to go global too.
Yeah, well, Peaky took a long time, man. Peaky, like, only really, I'd say I only really started properly getting noticed, recognised and stuff, was after season 3. And then I know it took on even more of a sort of a huge, huge sort of following, probably season 4 onwards. So Peaky's a slow burner, and a lot of these things are. Seems like this one is moving more quickly in terms of just people getting on board with it. I don't know if that's because of quarantine or the lockdown or sort of the kind of, you know, the in-your-face sort of brashness of it. You know, who knows? But it seems like people are getting onto it a little more quickly, which is I suppose, in this day and age is important, really, because that's what gets you the opportunity to do more.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, Joe, you've been great with your time. Congratulations on this. It is really great. Hopefully you get back to some proper one-on-one sparring out in the real world fairly soon.
Thank you, man. Good luck to yourselves. Thanks for chatting.
Cheers. Really appreciate that. As our guest this week was Joe Cole, talking about Gangs of London, which is, of course, available to stream right now on Now TV. That was the OTB Culture Hall of Fame this week. Remember, on Now TV, you can stream award-winning dramas such as Game of Thrones and Parks and Recreation. See you next week.
The OTB Culture Hall of Fame.
Brought to you by Now TV. Watch whatever you're in the mood for.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.